What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
And I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives.
Take two.
Yeah, take two. Wild.
Take two. It is crazy that that has literally never happened to us before
until
we are off-site.
Yeah. So we just recorded the whole episode and went to go upload it and everything, and we had 6 whole minutes of recording.
6 whole minutes.
We were here for about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours recording,
literally.
And only had 6 minutes recorded.
So, take two, but it's probably going to be the best one you've ever heard from.
Hopefully.
We're doing it again.
Yeah, from the top. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
We decided tonight that we're going to be recording on site.
Yeah.
We are currently in the 1863 Hotel in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. So, yeah, I mean, we're take two. It isn't fun, but it's what it is.
It is what it is.
The ghost here apparently is messing with us. There's a what would you call it? I don't know, a regular ghost here. I was trying to think of, like, resident ghost. There it is. So before we dive into all the haunted stuff and, like, our personal stories, because we now have a couple since we came in yesterday, we're going to give you a little bit of a background of Gettysburg. It's Cliff Notes. This was a wild battle. It was 3 days, but just real quick for the Cliff Notes. It was July of 1863. The fields of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, became site of one of the bloodiest battles in the American Civil War. Over the course of 3 days, more than 50,000 soldiers were killed, wounded, or missing. The town and the surrounding hills were transformed into a living nightmare. But it wasn't just the battlefield that was soaked in blood. The town itself became a sprawling hospital and a charnel house, and many of the local buildings, like the courthouse, were overrun with the wounded. One volunteer aid worker described the scene as soldiers lying on the bare floor, covered with blood, dirt, and vermin, entirely naked, having to use a newspaper to protect their festering wounds from flies.
Horrible.
It's terrible. And I still can't remember what that germ thing is. It was before they knew that germs were a thing. So the wounded were screaming in agony under the sweltering summer heat. One man lay with a huge wound in his side with his lungs protruding out a few inches. Another soldier ended up surviving 5 separate wounds but lost both of his eyes. Fanny Bueller, a resident of Gettysburg, recalled the endless sound of limbs being amputated amid the cries and groans of the mangled and dying. I really should learn to click when I get there. She often had to cover her ears to drown out the horror. The stench of rotten blood and smoke hung in the air for weeks. The flies came by the thousand as the disease followed close behind. Now, it was said that you could smell Gettysburg in Philadelphia if the wind blew the correct way.
Because, like, yeah, think about it. We're in, like, the heat of summer.
50,000 people in the heat.
Oh, now, my God, it's horrible.
So, Gettysburg was a mass trauma event, and the sheer level of suffering, pain, and grief concentrated in one place in such a short time definitely left an imprint that many believe go beyond memory. It's no wonder that Gettysburg has become a paranormal epicenter, a place where the dead don't rest quietly. While the history books may close the chapter with a Union victory, the real story unfolds in the silence between the cannon shots and the cold spots, between the stones and the whispers that are carried on in the wind. So we're going to cover some of the most haunted areas of Gettysburg, go into a couple people encounters, wrap up with mine and Em's own personal encounters, because she now has a few from Gettysburg in just one night here. Yeah, and then let everybody enjoy their Halloween. Yeah. So we're going to start off with Devil's Den. And This jagged, chaotic tangle of boulders became the stage for one of the bloodiest, most savage engagements of the entire battle. It was during day two of the fight. Confederate forces surged through small, maze-like terrain, and the Union troops fought desperately to hold their ground. The visibility was poor, as there was so much, like, smoke from all the guns and stuff going off.
Right.
It was terrible. You just couldn't see anything. And with the layout being disorienting, friend and foe collided in blind terror. Close-range firefights erupted with every step. Some men got gunned down at point-blank range, while others were bayoneted. Bodies were piled between the stones like disregarded rag dolls, and more than 2,600 soldiers died here. But what lingers is an uncanny stillness that came after. Confederate snipers used rocky outcrops as nests, and many of their bodies remained unburied for days. Some never were buried at all. Eyewitnesses claim corpses were shoved into deep crevices between boulders, left to rot and disappear into the earth. The air grew thick with decay, and at night, the survivors, those who got the lucky job of standing guard, reported something far worse than enemy fire. Strange whispers, cold winds with no source, and the feeling of being watched by something not entirely alive. If you hear background noise, we are recording from our hotel room. So, you know, normally we are in the archives, and we have a little more soundproofing than we do here. So we may sound a little hollow this week. Anyway, from that point on, Devil's Den was never quiet again. Ghost sightings here, they didn't start decades later. They started almost immediately.
Which is crazy to me that, like, it did not take longer. Like, they happened that second.
Yeah. Soldiers from both sides spoke of eerie sounds echoing off the stones, battle cries, phantom gunfire, men screaming in agony. Even when the fighting had ceased, the sounds continued to carry on. One ghost here is known infamously as the Barefoot Ghost of Devil's Den. Dozens of eyewitnesses stretching back to the 1970s and recently in the last few years have described the same exact man. He's shoeless, long-haired, raggedy clothing, and has a wide-brimmed floppy hat. His appearance is sudden and disorienting. He's often spotted at dawn near the top of the boulders, and without any introduction, he says, "What you're looking for is over there." He points to the trees or off toward the triangular field, and when the startled visitors turn to look, he then vanishes. Some have even unknowingly captured him in photos, standing near the rocks, slightly buried and pale. Blurred and pale. Rangers at the Information Center have confirmed that there's multiple people who are unrelated all describe the same figure. Nobody knows who he is, but many believe he's one of the Southern soldiers who died here, perhaps never receiving a proper burial, clothing, or rest, which is what we were saying, that he could be pointing to his body. He's like, "What you're looking for is over there."
And I feel like that's definitely a lot of the reason for most of the ghosts that are here, is, like, a lot of them didn't get a proper burial.
No, they didn't.
Like, it was just just that.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't. They were just,
like, they're left. Not resting peacefully.
No. And that's maybe what he's doing. He's trying to get his body found to rest peacefully.
Yeah.
Many of the Confederate troops, they suffered from supply shortages. Their packages from home often never arrived. Having clean clothes and boots were luxuries that they couldn't afford. So a shoeless, dirty soldier wandering the rocks isn't just plausible. It's horrifyingly accurate.
Right. Like, I don't doubt it. Not at all.
The next spirit that's tied to Devil's Den is a phantom cavalryman. There are stories of cavalrymen on horseback who charges across the ridge only to disappear mid-gallop. Tourists have recorded unexplained EVPs where men's voices shout over the gunfire that isn't there. Cries of anguish echoing during otherwise quiet sunrise walks. Cameras shut down, batteries drain, and people report cold spots in the height of summer. Even skeptics admit something chilling in those boulders. One Gettysburg writer, Emmanuel Bushman, reported unnatural and supernatural sights and sounds here even before the Civil War. Early settlers and Native American accounts spoke of ghosts, wandering spirits of chiefs, and strange lights among the rocks. The name Devil's Den was already in use before the battle, and a place considered cursed long before the first shot was fired. Now, if you take a short drive from the battlefield, depending upon where you're at on the battlefield, nestled on a quiet street in town. That street's not very quiet.
Yeah, I feel like it's a pretty, it's pretty busy. Pretty popular street.
Pretty busy.
Maybe it was quiet then.
It might have been quiet then. Stands a structure that looks charming, even quaint. It's got brick walls, colonial windows, ivy climbing up the sides, but don't let its appearance fool you. The Farnsworth House Inn is widely regarded as one of the most haunted locations in Gettysburg. Still in operation today as a bed and breakfast, the Farnsworth House was used by the Confederate snipers during the Battle of Gettysburg. They were stationed in the attic and took aim at the Union soldiers moving across nearby Cemetery Hill. Just so happens, Cemetery Hill is just above Jenny Wade's house. On the third day of the battle, Union troops stormed the building. The confrontation inside was brief and bloody, and the snipers were killed where they stood. The inn was later converted into a makeshift hospital. Pretty much every house
was a makeshift hospital. Every building in Gettysburg was.
As with such many of the buildings in Gettysburg, many of the soldiers died inside its walls. To this day, bullet holes scar the exterior. There's 135 of them. Visible evidence of the building's violent past.
Yeah, it's insane.
It really is when you walk by and you can see all the holes. Knowing how old they are.
Yeah.
It's believed that at least 16 distinct spirits occupy the inn, each with a different presence, personality, and preferred hunting ground. Guests and staff alike report disembodied breathing, distant grunts, muffled voices, and a strong, sudden scent of cigars in the room with no smokers. A midwife ghost reportedly moves silently through the upper floors. The spirit of an 8-year-old boy is sometimes seen peeking from corners or heard laughing faintly behind closed doors. And then you have the music. In the dead of night, from the empty attic above, the eerie twang of a John harp. Sorry,
you know what's
my
so
Philadelphian
funny?
Showed.
You said John the first time, too, and I didn't
Did
correct
I?
You. Yep.
Well, I just said it again. I corrected myself. A jaw harp floats down the stairs. No one's up there, but the tune is distinct, simple, repetitive, and old. The sound, many believe, belong to a Confederate soldier who once stood guard in the very attic. If I have to say anything, I don't think he did a good job.
Yeah.
Of all of the rooms, none are more infamous than the Sarah Black Room, named after a member of the family who formerly owned it. The window of the room, visible from the street, has been photographed dozens of times. Witnesses notice a pale figure peering through the glass, even when the room is completely empty. Guests brave enough to sleep there have reported the sounds of sobbing, the feeling of cold hands touching their face in the dark, and in some cases, a crushing pressure on the chest, like someone is sitting on them while they sleep. Guests have also reported feeling a presence watching them from the corner or hearing a woman singing a lullaby. Some visitors have fled the room before sunrise, leaving all of their belongings behind. Then we have one of the inn's more volatile spirits, the spirit of a former cook who is often described as elderly dressed in period clothing and unmistakably bad-tempered. Staff says she tugs on apron strings, knocks objects off shelves, and has even pushed employees with displease. She's not shy about making her presence known. Some call her malicious. Others say she's just trying to keep her kitchen in order. But whatever it is, she lets you know that she's still around.
She just doesn't want anybody in her kitchen.
Nope, she wants it run her way.
Mm-hmm.
She's the boss. So since it's Halloween, we're going to talk about one of the more fascinating incidents that happened at the Farnsworth House Inn on a more modern Halloween night. It was the evening a local radio station was scheduled to do a live broadcast from the inn. The crew arrived casually dressed, but unintentionally wore matching blue jeans and blue shirts. It was a striking resemblance to the uniforms worn by the Union soldiers during the Civil War. While testing equipment, one of the members picked up the phone to call back to the station to check their feed. On the other end, there was a technician coincidentally named Captain. The crew member greeted him by saying, "Hey Captain, how's our signal?" But that one word would appear to set off a chain reaction that no one could have expected. Also on site that night was a psychic medium, who immediately sensed a spike in the spiritual activity. She reported that the soldier spirits inside the inn were suddenly in a frenzy. Whispers, movements, and unrest swept through the rooms. According to her, the ghosts of the Confederate snipers who once used the house as a perch had overheard the word captain and had seen the blue clothing. To them, it wasn't a Halloween broadcast. It was a Union reconnaissance team, and they believed they had been discovered. And worse, they suspected a spy was among them. The psychic tried desperately to explain and plead with the spirits that the war was over and they were safe, but her words never landed. The soldiers were too agitated, convinced that they had to protect their position. It was as if, for a few moments, the war never ended, the dead were still fighting, and still afraid. By the end of the night, multiple guests and staff reported shadow figures in the hallways, windows where faces appeared briefly, and the sound of boots stomping across the attic floor. This moment gives us a deeper glimpse into what some paranormal investigators believe to be intelligent hauntings. They're not just imprints or echoes. These are conscious entities responding to the present, misinterpreting it through the lens of their past. It's one thing to feel cold spot in the air, but it's another thing entirely to be mistaken for an enemy. What's a haunted area without a haunted covered bridge?
Duh.
The Saks covered bridge is picturesque by day, chilling by night. It was built in 1852 by David Stoner. The 100-foot wooden span once allowed soldiers and civilians safe passage across Marsh Creek. But in the shadow of war, it became something else entirely. A stage for death, despair, and perhaps an internal haunting. During the Battle of Gettysburg, Saks Bridge became a critical crossing point for both the Union and Confederate troops, but legend has it that three Confederate soldiers tried to escape the battlefield by disguising themselves in Union uniforms and blending in with the Northern troops. When they were discovered, they were accused, depending upon who you ask, of being deserters, spies, or traitors.
I wonder how they, like, figured that out. Like, I wonder,
bet
like,
you it was a Southern twang.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, like, I wonder, like, what made them accuse them? Like, what was it?
Yeah.
Because that is crazy. Like, I mean, it's a smart idea, honestly, to just try to blend in with the other guys.
Oh, yeah. Regardless of their true intent, they were hanged from the bridge, from the bridge's wooden support beams, as a warning to other Southern soldiers who considered defection.
Dang.
Their lifeless bodies swung above the water, exposed to every passing troop. Today, many believe those men never left. Paranormal investigators and thrill seekers alike have reported chilling phenomena on and around the bridge. The strong phantom scent of cigar smoke will suddenly waft through the air, despite no one being nearby. The sound of distant cannon fire, boots stomping, and ghostly moans echo across the planks. Visitors feel icy, cold spots, or worse, a sudden tap on the shoulder, only to turn around and find that nobody's there. But the most unsettling report came from those who've witnessed the unexplainable. Three disembodied heads floating mid-air, their features twisted in silent anguish. These apparitions appear to be the very same soldiers who were executed over 160 years ago. EVP recordings have captured voices saying, "Go back," or "He's watching." One particularly famous recording features a southern-accented male voice simply whispering, "Help." So, we also have time slips here in Gettysburg.
Oh, great.
Yeah. There is the Old Dorm, as it's affectionately known today, but it was Pennsylvania Hall at Gettysburg College. It stands as a historic monument and a supernatural vortex. It was built in 1837, and it was the crown jewel of what was then Pennsylvania College. Serving as a resident hall for students from all over the country, but during the blood-soaked days of July 1863, the building underwent a grim transformation. It became a field hospital. Not a pristine one with modern equipment and anesthesia, but a desperate, overflowing pit of horror, where soldiers in blue and gray cried out in pain. The original structure still stands today, and according to decades of reports from students, faculty, and campus security, it hasn't forgotten its war-torn past. Of all of the tales that crawl out of the Pennsylvania Hall, one account stands above the rest. It's chilling, well-documented, and straight out of a horror movie. It comes to be known by many as the Elevator Incident. Which I think the first time we came to Gettysburg, I don't think I ever heard of this. Which is wild. Anyway, it was a quiet evening. The corridors of the old dorm were likely dim, the leftover lighting buzzing and flickering in a half-hearted way that only old buildings can manage. Two female administrators, chatting and ready to head home, stepped into the elevator. The button was pressed for the first floor. The car lurched to life, creaking as it descended, until it bypassed the first floor entirely. They gave each other a puzzled look, kind of like, "What the heck's going on?" And one woman tapped the button again, and nothing. The elevator came to a full stop in the basement. Now, basements in old college buildings are creepy on their best days. And this was no exception. It was used mostly for storage. It was used mostly for storage. It was filled with old filing cabinets, dusty papers, maybe a few forgotten relics from the past, from when it housed students. But what greeted them when those doors slid open was something else entirely. They didn't see dust or cabinets. They saw a glimpse into hell. Blood pooled across the floor, Civil War soldiers, some barely clinging to life, others who were clearly gone, were sprawled across the basement in twisted agony. Limbs dangled, men screamed, the walls were soaked in gore. A team of tired, soot-faced doctors sawed limbs with grim focus, each amputation more brutal than the last one. One orderly walked by, carrying an armful of discarded limbs, leaving a trail of red behind him. The two women froze. It was a full-blown battlefield hospital, but not a recreation. It was happening. And then one of the orderlies looked up, his eyes met theirs. With hollow, desperate sadness, he walked toward the elevator. His hand reached out, and just as it crossed the threshold, ding! The door squeaked closed. The women shrieked, pressing the buttons frantically, the car jolted again, and it took them up. Up to the first floor. When the doors opened, the basement and all its horrors had vanished. Shaking and sobbing, the administrators sprinted to the security office. The officer on duty, later interviewed by Mark Nesbitt, confirmed how distraught they were. He personally escorted them back down just to prove it was nothing. The elevator door opened. The basement was once again just a basement. Filing cabinets, cardboard boxes, silence. But the memory, unforgettable. The two never used that elevator again.
That elevator, I'd never use an elevator, period, again.
Yeah, that if elevator.
It's like just, that happened to me, I'm not stepping. I don't care if it's 8 floors, I'm taking the stairs.
Mm-hmm, it's just out of order.
Yeah.
Period. Now, this isn't the only story to surface from the old dorm. In fact, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, perfect.
Author Mark Nesbitt documented similar events from unrelated witnesses. Another woman had nearly an identical experience with the elevator. Multiple students and staff have seen shadowy figures lurking in the upper tower. Some have looked up at the cupola and spotted a man in uniform frantically waving for help. When they alert others or look again, he's gone. Psychics who visit the site report deep feelings of despair and trauma, emotional echoes from a time soaked in blood. Some investigators say Pennsylvania Hall acts as a spiritual hotspot, a place where the veil is so thin, time may literally fold in on itself. Hence the elevator's time slip, a moment when the living cross into the past, not metaphorically, but physically. Not just seeing ghosts, but walking into their world. Students, too, have their stories. Tales of footsteps in empty halls, whispered voices in the dark, cold spots that stretch entire stairwells. Some say the building has moods, that when it's angry, nothing works. The lights flicker, phone calls drop, the elevators misbehave. But when it's calm, it's almost as if the building's humming.
It's just moody.
So, from Pennsylvania Hall, the next building on our tour was originally a private home that was turned into a Civil War hospital. But this building's basement brimmed with pain long before it was officially cursed. After the war, the property became the National Soldiers Orphanage, a beacon of hope for the children left behind by the carnage of Gettysburg. And at first, it was hopeful. Ulysses S. Grant himself once visited in a campaign to drum up donations, but the fragile sense of peace was shattered when the orphanage first headmistress was replaced. Now, we did a haunted walking tour last night. I haven't reviewed any of my photos yet, but we did go into the backyard of the orphanage.
Freaky. I did not enjoy it. Gave me a very weird feeling.
Yep. And we'll, again, I think I said earlier, we're going to cover our own personal stories that we have, because now Em has at least 2 of her own, I think. And then I've got at least 4 towards the end of this. But the orphanage is on there. So the new headmistress, Rosa, was a cruel disciplinarian cloaked in Christian authority, ruling with an iron brutality. The children were beaten, starved, isolated, and worst of all, chained to the walls of the basement, which she converted into a cold stone dungeon. What began as a place of healing soon became a house of torment. By 1876, the children's condition had deteriorated, their education suffered, they were rarely seen outside, and when they were, their clothes were in tatters. Locals noticed a sharp rise in doctors' calls, though no town doctor could explain the sudden spike. Rosa had total control of the building and refused outside entry, keeping curious residents and worried neighbors at bay. The conflict reached a boiling point on Memorial Day of 1876. The children, many mourning their own fallen fathers, were forbidden to join in the flower distributing ceremonies. Instead, they were locked inside and forced to watch from the windows. Outraged, the townspeople put Rosa on trial for cruelty to children. She was found guilty, fined $20, and ordered to leave town, but she refused. So the $20 back then was about 2 months of her salary.
Not enough.
Not enough. But the scales of justice were not.
Yeah.
They weren't very equal there. So barricading herself in the orphanage, Rosa continued to rule with unchecked power. Then, on Christmas Eve, two men heard pitiful cries coming from the outhouse. Inside, they found a four-year-old boy shivering in the cold, locked out as punishment. He wore nothing but a threadbare nightshirt, and at that moment, it triggered a full investigation. What they discovered was horrifying. Shoeless children in rags, chained in the cellar dungeon, some shackled to the walls, others left to stand, if they could, in vats of freezing water until they collapsed. Rosa didn't act alone, though. She enlisted the older boys, aged 14 to 19, to help carry out beatings and punishments. I feel like that can go back and forth, because if you don't do what she's going to say, you're just going to get beaten right. And punished. So,
yeah.
Kind of one of those annoying, like...
You lose.
Yeah. Some children were reported missing and never found, though no murder charges were ever filed. Now, it's said that there were bodies of children found in the backyard.
Yeah.
Eventually, Rosa was forced out of Gettysburg in 1877. She vanished from the record, but the darkness she left behind never did. The orphanage closed for good. Its walls, they say, never stopped whispering. Today, there's reports of phantom crying, disembodied voices, and unseen hands brushing against visitors. Hearing the chains clanging in the empty halls, others spot ghostly children peering from the basement shadows just before they disappear into the dark. So it's also said that a bunch of the ghosts of the children from the orphanage you'll find in the Jenny Wade house.
Mm.
Because they used to, when they were allowed outside, they'd run over there. Aww. To go and play. So, it's something I got for that.
Yeah.
So now we're going to be talking about Cemetery Hill, where over 3,500 Union dead were interred between autumn of 1863 and the spring of 1864. Today, more than 4,000 bodies rest beneath the soil, making it one of the most spiritually charged areas in all of Gettysburg. Decades later, roadwork disturbed not only the bones of the fallen, but many believe it's something else. Paranormal investigators consider this a major hotspot. Disembodied voices call from the shadows, phantom gunfire and distant screams echo across the grove. Misty figures drift between trees, evaporating into the air. Orbs of light weave through the darkness, vanishing just before they can be caught on film. One of the most chilling tales is that of a young girl who is believed to be a post-war suicide victim who was driven mad by the chaos she witnessed, or perhaps the trauma of what she lost. She now wanders endlessly between the trees, and witnesses describe her pale figure gliding silently just out of reach. Some of the more forceful energy in the area is said to concentrate at the inn at Cemetery Hill, where guests report apparitions following them through the halls, rattling doorknobs, and knocking on the walls in the middle of the night. One visitor even claimed to awaken to the sight to half of an apparition of a Confederate soldier's torso and head, standing at the foot of his bed, gasping for air. Kind of be wild if it was just the lower half.
Literally.
Would you even see it?
True.
There's just the lower half of a ghost standing at the bottom of my bed. How'd you know? I don't, but I'm just assuming it was there. Whether in the inn or in the grove, the atmosphere clings like fog. Heavy, sorrowful, and deeply unsettled. So, from, we're going to kind of cross the street to the Dobbin House. This is a charming colonial resident, restaurant. The house is a resident. It is a charming colonial restaurant offering elegant, candlelit dining and Revolutionary War era ambiance. But beneath the warm lighting and the antique decor lies a far darker history. Today, the Dobbin House operates as one of Gettysburg's most popular dining spots, but both staff and guests report encounters with the unexplained. Whispers in empty rooms, cold drafts with no source, objects moving on their own, and the second floor, once part of the original family's private quarters, is especially active. One of the most frequently seen apparitions is a woman dressed in a flowing blue gown. She's often spotted drifting through the upstairs rooms or standing quietly by the windows. Some believe she was once a Civil War nurse tending to the wounded, or perhaps a grieving mother forever searching for a lost child. Witnesses describe her as peaceful but filled with sorrow. Then you have the Phantom Children, where laughter echoes down empty staircases, tiny footsteps race across wooden floors. These sounds and the occasional sighting of spectral children are reported regularly. Thought to be the remnants of the building's early years as a schoolhouse, were perhaps the Dobbin family's own children, these playful spirits are often sensed in the attic and the dining rooms. Staff even claim to hear marbles rolling or feel tugs on their clothing when no one is nearby. Another lingering presence is believed to be that of a Union soldier mortally wounded and cared for here when the house was converted into a Civil War field hospital. He's seen stumbling near the basement stairs, moaning softly in pain. The area is known for an oppressive atmosphere, cold spots, waves of nausea, and the sudden sense of being watched. Some employees flat out refuse to enter the basement after dark. Now, beyond the ghosts, the Dobbin House has a mischievous side. Candles extinguish on their own. Dishes tumble from secure shelves. Doors swing open when slammed shut without warning. Staff report hearing their names whispered in empty rooms or feeling phantom touches on their shoulders. Guests have even requested to move tables due to an unshakable sense of being watched. Beneath the floorboards of the Dobbin House lies hidden spaces that were used by the Underground Railroad.
That's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
Even the Underground Railroad ran through here.
Right.
Though they once offered hope to escaping enslaved people, some believe not all made it out alive. Reports of mysterious bloodstains that vanish by morning have added to the legend, and others claim to smell cigar smoke, said to be the lingering presence of Alexander Dobbin himself. Now, this Knox building was once a dairy farm that was turned into a field hospital. The Hoffman Mansion is a maelstrom of activity where doors slam on their own, shadows dart through the attic, the ghost of the Hoffman daughter who hanged herself after a heartbreak still drifts silently upstairs. But the darkest figure is said to be a doctor who once ran the hospital. A black shape appears in the corners before misfortune strikes. Visitors often report whispers, cold touches, and oppressive feelings of being observed. On to the next building, which is now home to a photography business. This unassuming building once held the lifeless body of Union General John F. Reynolds. I always want to say John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Every time I get to
John F. Yep. It's just the most.
It just wants to come out. His blood soaked the floorboards and the stains that are said to reappear without warning. The ghost of his fiancée, Catherine Hewitt, is believed to mourn within its walls. A mischievous ghost, only known as the Liar, plays tricks on visitors, and doors also creak, items vanish, and the chilling whispers still float through the halls. Many of these homes in Gettysburg are owned by the National Park Service. The spirits inside still make their presence known. in the George Wilker House. The second floor door won't stay shut. Even after the National Park Services have nailed it closed, it will still open. And footsteps echo from the attic where no one lives. We have the Hummelburg House, which is where Confederate General William Barksdale died slowly, crying out for water. His ghost is still heard begging, and on the anniversary of his death, the mournful howls of his loyal hunting dog echoes across the field.
Don't tell me that. That's sad.
Apparently, the story on that, too, is like his wife or fiance came to get his body to, like, claim him.
Yeah.
And she brought the dog. And the dog wouldn't leave where, like, his grave was.
Stop.
Yeah.
I didn't need that.
Yep. Well, now you have it.
Thanks.
I just threw it over to you.
Like, ow.
We have the Rose Farm, which was used as a hospital and mass burial ground. According to the local doctor named Dr. J.W.C. O'Neill and reported by Mark Nesbitt, one of the daughters on the Rose Farm went insane during exhumations, having lived through both the battle and its aftermath. She claimed to see blood flowing from the very walls. Years later, workers witnessed glowing apparitions while digging near the soldiers' graves. They say the spirits were disturbed, and now they roam freely. So, they are some of the local haunted houses or places where you can go and see ghosts. Now we've got some Reddit posts of people who've had experiences here, and then we'll wrap up with our experiences as long as the device wants to keep working.
As of right now, we're still going.
So, some of these stories have been lightly edited for clarity and for the flow, but the words and the experiences are those of the original witness. So, we've got our first story from F19, a ghost rider on Reddit, and it goes, I saw a Confederate ghost at Gettysburg myself several years ago, but not along the road. I was at the viewing area on Little Round Top, looking down towards Devil's Den. I could see a few tourists on one of the paths when I suddenly spotted what was clearly a Civil War soldier, rifle musket in hand, clambering up to where the tourists were standing. He ran forward a few feet, then collapsed and vanished. The whole thing lasted no more than 3 or 4 seconds, and it was getting dark, so it was easy to tell that he was wearing a grayish uniform, not the dark blue of the Union Army. I know it was a ghost because this happened right behind two of the tourists, and they had absolutely no reaction.
Which is absolutely insane.
Which we'll get into, like, people not reacting when you see something in one of my stories.
It's just crazy.
The soldier figure couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 feet from them. Another user, Wishbone Senior 5859, replied to that thread, saying, I remember reading about a Maryland investigator who recorded what sounded like war drums on the outskirts of Gettysburg. He was using an old analog cassette deck with a UV meter that pulsed with every beat. The drumming went on for about 10 minutes, and excited, he packed up, drove home eager to listen, but when he played the tape back, there was nothing. The war drums were completely gone.
Crazy.
The next story we have is from the Farnsworth House Inn. And it goes, my in-laws surprised my wife and me with a night at the Farnsworth House Inn, said to be one of the most haunted hotels in America. We investigated two rooms that night. The Custer Room, named after General Custer, and the Lincoln Room. Not sure who it's named after.
I've never heard of that guy in my life.
Never heard of him at all. Starting in the Custer Room, we used a voice recorder and spirit box but I didn't get much activity there, except visual. My father-in-law and I kept seeing a dark humanoid figure walking around in the bathroom. My wife was attacked by a black mass that seemed to come from the ceiling. She was laying on the bed when it rushed her. She ran off immediately, feeling the cold rush of air and hearing a strange screeching noise. We left that room for the night because it felt like there was an evil presence there. In the Lincoln room, activity was intense. The room is famous for a spirit cat, which we'll mention later. We captured an EVP of a male gasping and choking. We communicated with a spirit named Jeremy, a 6 to 7 year old boy killed during the Civil War, known for playing tricks and untying shoes. My wife's shoes, which were double knotted, ended up with one shoe untied twice. My shoes always untie themselves. Constantly.
Nick doesn't need a ghost for his shoes to be untied.
I don't need a ghost. You guys can tie my shoes. Don't untie them.
Right. They'd have better luck tying them.
Yeah. I sat in an exact replica of the chair Abraham Lincoln died in when I heard a screeching sound fly past my head. So close, it felt almost inside my head. While my wife reviewed the voice recorder, an EMF reader was resting on her chest, shot from 0 to 20 mg. Not really sure what that means. She said it felt like there was a heavy animal sitting on her chest, and this lasted about several minutes. Then the activity went wild. My father-in-law's thigh kept getting grabbed. My wife kept feeling pokes on her forehead, and I felt something scratching at the bottom of my foot. This went on for about an hour before we decided to leave early. When we turned on the lights, every picture on the wall was crooked. This was by far the most intense activity I've ever experienced in a single night.
I love that they, like, it was so much that they decided, like, no, we're going to leave early.
Yeah, because, we're going to roll out early.
Yep.
This next account is from another Reddit user. We're not saying this
on the Ominous Archives because it's inappropriate.
So, this story goes, I went on a night tour of the old orphanage in Gettysburg a couple years ago, and it was a pretty creepy place. Quick backstory, the matron of the orphanage was extremely cruel and used to chain Civil War orphans in the basement dungeon. During the tour, you get down to what's called the pit. I went down alone and took some pictures on my iPhone. Using the live photo feature. Nothing unusual happened while I was there, but later when reviewing the photos, I noticed something strange. In one image, right after the flash went off, a white blur shoots across the frame, and you can even hear a whooshing sound. I took a screenshot, and it looks like a hand. Keep in mind, I was completely alone in the basement, and I can't think of any logical explanation for this. I shared it with a few friends, and they were pretty creeped out too, so I want to share it here, and we have a link to the video and to the hand screenshot. I think Em said she'll post the links.
I'm watching it right now, actually.
No, she's not listening to me. She's watching things.
I was watching the video. It's a little freaky.
Yeah.
I will post it to the stories.
So there's hundreds, if not thousands, of stories like this on Reddit and travel forums from people who visited Gettysburg. So you can kind of research it and check on your own. I've heard stories of families coming to visit their ancestor's grave and taking like a family picture with it kind of thing. And in the family picture, there's a soldier standing in the background.
Get the hell out of here.
That looks like their family member. There's all kinds of crazy stories. Some of ours, because this has been the moment that we've been waiting for and why we held on to this for so long and decided to record in Gettysburg. I came here in, 2015 with Frankie, and at that point, we kind of just wanted to see it. I wanted to come out and see it. I thought it was haunted, but I was also, it was just so crazy what happened there.
It's too close to for us to not go.
Yeah.
There's so much history here. I think like there's so much to see.
Yeah. So we came and we took a candlelight ghost tour, which there's a ton of them in a couple minutes. We're going to name a couple places, or at least a couple different tours you can take. And we took one. And her and I, we did a walk. We went through the Jenny Wade house. And that's really cool walking through. That time in the Jenny Wade house, I didn't feel anything or see anything until we got outside. And we were outside on the sidewalk. And I was taking pictures of the front of the house. And our tour guide was in the back, like, shutting the lights off because we were the last tour. And in one of my pictures, I have a picture of the lights on. And then the next picture is the lights off. And in the bottom left window, there is a picture of a woman. I have the picture. We will post it to Instagram. It blows my mind every time I see it. I've tried looking in the picture with the light to see if there's anything where I'm like, oh, it could be this. I don't see anything. When you see the next picture, maybe you can say, oh, well, she's a part of the curtain that's hanging there. But I'm like, it goes out past the curtain some. You can see a shoulder and everything. So we have that. And then on that same tour, we walked up to the orphanage. And at this point, we weren't allowed in the orphanage because the company that we took didn't have rights to it. So we were allowed in the backyard. And we're standing in the backyard. And it's kind of like it was like an L shape. It had a gate. And I walked up towards like where the top of the L would be. Think of a backwards facing L.
Right.
And I worked up like where the top is. And there's this tree in like the back corner. So if you're at the top of the L, you're kind of like straight on with it. If you walk in where like you'd walk in to go into the backyard, it's to the back left.
Yeah.
And I'm staring at it, and all of a sudden I see this little kid, and his head pops out from behind the tree, and I'm like, there's no way. It's not
right,
possible.
Like, you do the whole thing with your eyes, like, yeah, rub your eyes.
I rubbed
like,
the
no
eyes
way. Like,
I could see him clear as day.
Right.
I went up further on the L. I'm like, there's got to be a camera. There's something somewhere.
There's a projector something.
So I'm walking. I walked up to one point, and then I walked down around to the other side. So I kind of gotten a full like view around this tree. Right. I don't see any lights. So I'm like, there's no way. So I walk back up to Frank. I'm like, hey, can you do me a favor and just look at that tree? Because I didn't want to say anything to her.
Right.
I didn't want to say there's a boy behind that tree.
Yeah.
Because partially at this point, I'm like, I'm either insane or I'm seeing a ghost.
Right.
But I need to, like, I need to have the confirmation, so I can't tell her what I'm seeing.
Right.
So I tell her, just look at the tree. And she's looking. And like a minute maybe goes by. She turns and looks at me and goes, there's a boy. And I said, yeah. I said, what's he look like? And she's like, he's got a bowl cut. He's in like overalls and like a t-shirt. And I was like, that's exactly what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. So what makes this story even crazier, I made sure not to tell her what I saw.
Right.
She saw exactly what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else on that tour reacted. There were people all around us.
Yeah, nobody else.
All around us. And nobody did nothing. Nobody freaked out. Nobody pointed at the tree. Nothing.
Yeah.
Just us two.
Whew.
So they're my two, like, deep stories.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
I know Frankie, when we go to the orphanage, the next time we came, we toured the orphanage inside.
Yeah.
And I know the vibes were just off. Yeah, she was just nope.
Yeah, she was like, absolutely no part of it.
Yeah, I walked into the pit, they called it, but it's more of like a hollowed out wall.
Right.
Where she kept the kids, and it was small.
Mm-hmm.
The chains were on the wall.
I was just in the backyard and could just feel like there's a difference of when you're like standing in the backyard than when you're standing out front of it.
Yep.
Or like even when you're like standing in the back, like where the cemetery is, because there's like a cemetery back kind of like a bit farther.
Yeah, the east cemetery.
Even there, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, this is creepy. Like, it's dark and it's a cemetery, but nothing like the feeling that I felt when we were standing in that backyard.
So, we arrived yesterday, And I don't know if I said this already, but we're staying at the 1863 Inn. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in town. It's like a 10-minute walk from like the roundabout in Gettysburg. And we're right next to the Jenny Wade House.
Yeah.
So we get here. It's 1:30, mm-hmm. 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And we're bringing our stuff up to the rooms. And we're staying, we're fourth floor, so we can kind of overlook everything on the front side of the building. And we hit the elevator floor for four. And all of a sudden, we're like going up in this elevator. I've already taken the elevator once, and it was fine.
Right. We're like bouncing going up in this elevator.
Yeah. Like, it's like bouncing up and down. And then when we got to our floor, the door took like an oddly long time opening. Like,
suspicious amount of time to open.
So we're all thinking it's kind of crazy, like, wow, this is nuts. We know nothing. Yeah. But at this point, we don't know anything. We unload everything, go downstairs because we're going to grab something to eat, and now that elevator is out of order.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still on the same floor. I'm pretty sure the door was still open.
Yeah.
So it's like the door never reclosed when we got out of it. We end up taking this ghost tour last night, and we stop out front of the inn.
First stop is where we literally start the tour, we walk, and he puts his little candlelight down right out front of our hotel. And I said, okay, great. what are you about to tell me?
So he goes on about telling of a story of a spirit here whose name is George.
Mm-hmm.
I've read that he is a old, I don't want to say janitor,
but he's
an old housekeeper. He said last night that they say George is a child from the orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless,
His name is George.
And things he likes to do to visitors is lock them in the elevators.
First thing he says, so he likes to mess with the elevators. And we all literally look at each other like, oh my goodness, like, that's insane.
Yep. He's also apparently said to turn the sink water on you out of nowhere.
Flush toilets.
And if you're in the shower, he likes to turn the shower water off on you.
Yes. Also, we'll rummage through your luggage. Like, if you leave and come back and something's, like, not where you left it, it's just George.
Yep. And then we continued on with the tour. We haven't reviewed any of our photos yet. If we catch anything, we'll put them on Instagram. But last night when I was sleeping, so we normally with the baby, she does not like to sleep anywhere besides our home. So she actually went down. She was fine.
Right.
So we're sleeping, and it has to be, I don't know. I guess it's 3. It's got to be 3 a.m.
Yeah, because my aunt said it was about 3,
and she heard what I heard. And I woke up, and I literally just hear cannon fire.
Yep.
And you know, you can hear the difference between, like, I'll say, like, a car backfire and a cannon.
Because you know how a car sounds.
Yeah.
Like, you know what a car sounds like.
And it was too, it was just, like, the gaps between everything was too, it was like a, it was literally like a, I mean, think of a cannon fire. It would go off, and then it was quiet for a second.
Yep.
And then it would go off again.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like car backfire is kind of like a bang, bang.
Yeah.
Like, real loud. This was kind of like, it was almost like underneath everything.
Yeah.
You could hear it. And I heard it for a good couple minutes. And then my aunt this morning, we were talking about it, and she said, she was like, I thought it was a car backfiring.
Yeah. Also, my mom, as a car, rudely drives past very loudly. But also, my mom did not go on the ghost tour with us. Now, I come back after the ghost tour, and we're just talking like about like the day, whatever. And earlier in the day, we had gone to lunch, and we come out of lunch, and my mom says to me, you know, I really, like, smelled mint. Like, I don't know why. Like, it was so weird. Like, I just kept smelling peppermint. Well, our tour guide tells us last night that a lot of times people report in Gettysburg that you can smell peppermint because that's they put it on a cloth and put it over their face to mask the smell of all the
death and decay.
Death and bodies and all that. And it's just so crazy to me because, like, my mom had no idea that it was, they said that. And she was like, yeah, just kept smelling mint. It was so weird.
So, pretty much regardless, this Gettysburg is not only is there a lot that's happened here, but it is definitely haunted. There are spirits, there's ghosts.
Not a doubt in my mind.
Definitely don't. Like I said earlier, I think it is a whole energy alignment thing. I think you have to get your energy to kind of meet their energy.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to experience anything. So I will say, we'll talk about some of the tours. There's a bunch of award-winning companies, but we have the Gettysburg Battle, Battlefield Tours. This is an award-winning company. It blends historic storytelling with chilling access. They're the only tour in Gettysburg that lets you enter the two famously haunted buildings of the Jenny Wade House and the Orphanage. They also offer a ghostly encounters tour, a haunted bus tour, and a midnight tour with Black Lantern Paranormal. We have their websites, so we can also post them on Instagram and stuff like that, or in our little description. So you guys, if you come, you can click on them and find them. There's U.S. Ghost Adventures, Civil War Ghosts. It's known for its variety and energy. This company offers several different themed ghost tours. There's the Civil War Ghosts of Gettysburg Tour, the Unlimited Dead Tour, the Booze and Booze Haunted Pub Crawl.
I really like that.
That's a good one. The Jenny Wade Birthplace Ghost Hunt and Historic Wentley House Tour. We'll also have their website. And then there's the After Dark Investigations. This isn't just a walk with stories. This is active paranormal investigations. You're given an EMF detector, dowsing rods, spirit boxes, and thermal imaging tools.
That's sick.
Guests have recorded widespread responses like still fighting and experienced sudden battery drains or EMF spikes in calm areas. Triangular field, triangular field, part of the tour route, is one of the most paranormally active locations in town. Some guys refuse to enter it at all after sunset.
That would be me. I'd be like, actually, we're not doing this part if it's not bright outside.
And then we have shadow figures and phantom footsteps, and direct replies through spirit boxes are also commonly reported. If you are headed out on a Gettysburg ghost tour or just exploring the battlefields on your own, they're a national park, so they're open dawn till dusk. You will get in trouble if you were found there after those hours.
You do not just pay to let that you know. Fine.
But always make sure your phone battery is charged, because the cell phone drains are real.
Yeah.
Like I said, an open mind. Try to align your energy with kind of what happened here. And in case you really have a knack for, you know, things clinging to you or whatever, maybe bring some sage and salt.
Just in case.
So, that is it. That's Gettysburg for you guys.
Gettysburg.
Coming out on this Halloween night.
Yes. So fitting.
Yeah.
We had to do our big one on Halloween.
Yep. We got here. We're in Gettysburg. We're going to take all today.
Honestly, we might have some more updates after today, honestly.
So keep a lookout on Instagram and everything. We'll be posting. So I guess let's close it out, you know? We want to thank you guys for listening. As always, please rate, review, tell a friend to tell a friend, email us. We will contact you back.
Mm-hmm.
We try to do our best in getting in touch with everybody. But with all that being said, we're going to go explore the battlefields. We also have to thank Sam, who always does such good work, and you know, have to give her credit for writing the episodes.
Yeah, this is a really
she
good
organizes
one.
Everything for us, except for our personal experiences.
Yeah,
that was us. Go check her out at her own blog, Scare Me Sam, and she has her own podcast, Scare Me Sam. If you need to go check out a new horror book or thriller book, she's your gal. Now, with all that being said, we'd like to thank you again for joining us. I guess, keeping it simple, until next time, stay weird and stay haunted. See ya.
See ya.